Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Close your eyes. It's 12:30, and you're listening to the Ghost Story Guys.
Welcome to the Ghost Story Guys. I'm Brennan Storr.
I'm Paul Bestel.
And this is the show where we talk about spooks, specters, and all the other things watching us from the shadows beyond the campfire. Some conversations only make sense after the sun has set, and this is most definitely one. Thanks for tuning in. This is episode number 122. And we're coming to you from that tiny mountain cabin you dream about, but can never quite reach. How are you, Paul?
I'm very well. I'm working my way through my usual list of Halloween films and B-movie classics. So it's always good.
Fantastic. Yeah, you're currently on the Universal Monsters section of the program, are you not?
Yes, yeah. Well, luckily, the Horror Channel here in the UK is showing back-to-back Universal films from 11 a.m.
Oh, wow.
On Sunday. So I'll watch them all again on Sunday.
Now, does this include the elusive Spanish Dracula film you told me about?
No, they're not showing it. But it doesn't matter because I've got it.
Lucky bastard. I looked far and wide for that one on the internet, including, shall we say, gray market means, and could not find it. I think it only exists in physical form in that box that you own, which means I will be breaking into your house and descending from the ceiling Tom Cruise style to take it from you.
Well, I do, strangely enough, I do have two versions of the same box set.
Of course you do.
I have them all in 3D, even though my television isn't 3D.
Well, you never know when you're going to get a 3D television.
I also have them all on American DVD as well.
You never know when you're going to need to watch something where Dracula has a gun. So, you know, that's how you tell the difference.
Yes, very true.
Dracula is strapped, it's the American version. As for me, I have two things to tell you. One, in terms of my Halloween watching, because I have stupid brain, my brain likes to hyper-focus on the wrong thing at exactly the wrong time. Instead of horror movies this Halloween season, I have ended up watching martial arts movies, and I cannot convince my brain to start watching spooky movies, and I'm sure that pretty much on November 1st, that's when it'll happen. I've subscribed to this new, and I'm not going to mention the name because they haven't paid for advertising, but this new streaming service. It's like $3 a month, and it's exclusively martial arts movies and samurai movies and things like this. And so that's my stupid brain has gone, it's the spooky season. Time to watch guys punching each other's faces in.
Yeah, absolutely. You should watch Legend of the Seven Golden Vampires, and then you're ticking both boxes, aren't you?
You folks missed that one back when we had Movie Nightish. I miss Movie Nightish. That was fun.
And mind you, I think the last two finished us off, didn't they?
Yeah, well, blood-sucking pharaohs in Pittsburgh. I think that finished off careers, Movie Nightish, and possibly a few of my brain cells, man.
Yeah, it's one of those films that made me angry.
I was so proud of the fact that I showed you a movie so bad it came up when you were interviewed on another podcast. That made me so happy when I heard it come up on Monster. I think it was Monster Fuzz.
Yes.
It was all worth it. All 95 horrible minutes of that turd were worth it to hear it come up on another podcast.
Yeah, thanks.
It's my pleasure.
Yeah. I thought you might have just started watching martial arts films trying to get over how bad Halloween Kills is.
Oh, we'll talk about that in the Patreon Extra, but boy, was I disappointed in that movie. Good Lord. Anyways.
Yes.
Speaking of great shames, I did not get the job I interviewed for, which, as I explained to you off air, I think is because I pissed off the interviewer by asking him questions for which he was not prepared, and he seemed to take that personally.
How dare you go in there with reasonable expectations?
I know, right? In addition to it being kind of an awkward situation, he asked me possibly the worst question for that particular day. The very first question he asked me was, "So, tell me about your day before you came here." And, well, my day before I went to that interview, Paul, I walked around the corner to go to the bathroom and noticed a dead mouse in front of the bathroom door. I thought, okay, sure. Well, the cats are cats. Okay, fine. So I pick him up by the tail to escort the tiny corpse outside when his paws start moving. He's still alive.
A miracle.
I know. I have the power of laying on hands. The judge says I can't keep saying that. Maybe that's why they didn't hire me. But anyways, so I take the body outside. I take him outside. I lay him down in the grass, and he's clearly injured. You can't visibly see any wounds, but his back legs aren't working right. His forepaws are kind of scrambly. And I think, okay, so my psychopathic serial killer cat has clearly wounded him with the intention of killing him later. I figure he's probably dying. And I just couldn't stomach the notion of this poor little guy dying alone. So I just stay there with him. But I also can't bring myself to like bop him with a hammer or something. So I think, I'll just stay here with him so he doesn't die alone. But he starts moving around, just dragging himself around. And okay, this guy's, he's fighting. So all I had in my fridge was little chunks of feta cheese. So I went and got some little chunks of feta cheese. I brought it out to him. And he just dove into that shit, just started eating like crazy. And I thought, okay, maybe this guy's got more in him than I thought. Maybe he's okay. So I went and got a cardboard box. I ripped up a bunch of tissue and this and put it in there. I went and got him and I carefully escorted him into the box and I put a little more cheese in there and he kind of ate the cheese and hid himself in the box and was just staring at me from underneath the shavings. And I thought, okay, so now what the fuck do I do with this thing? Because again, I still don't think he's long for this world because his back legs aren't working, but he's pretty spry. And so I start Googling, what the fuck do I do with a half-dead mouse I just found? One website actually said, oh, if you find injured mice, put them in a bag and loop the bag around the tailpipe of your car. Start the car. What insanity is this? Is that like Joseph Mengele blogging for Zillow? Jesus Christ.
That's the dangers of people, anyone being able to create a website.
Yeah.
How to kill mice effectively.
I want to see what other mammals this guy is trying to kill or instructing people on how to off. If you want to kill a paper boy, here's what you do. Okay. Yeah. Someone should be reporting this.
Are you being pestered by a precocious bad beaver?
This guy's really pissed off a lot of animals. Somehow he's had unpleasant encounters with a lot of God's creatures, great and small.
When wrestling a ram, it's best to approach it from behind. Back to mice.
So I find out you can take them to the SPCA. So that is how I ended up, before my job interview, driving this box with this crippled mouse in it up to the SPCA, nursing it like I'm Rodent's Nightingale. And I like to think they got him a little mouse wheelchair, and he went to mouse law school, and now he's become Mouse Ironsides. Ask your grandparents. But I have no idea what happened. But imagine going for a job interview, and you've got to explain all that to someone who theoretically wants to employ you. Perhaps it's unsurprising I did not get the position.
Perhaps that was his website.
Well, no comment in case they're listening.
I'm not giving that guy a job. He didn't gas it.
That's right. That's the first step. Any wounded creature, put it in a bag.
You work here, you've got to be got to get used to gassing the mice. My way or the highway.
Wrapped around a tailpipe. Jesus Christ.
Wouldn't that make the bag melt, though?
I think they said like a cloth bag. Like they were really specific.
We've always got them knocking about. Yeah.
Get your nearest potato. Well, it's your killing sack. I guess if you're writing articles about how to off various creatures, you have a selection of pre-sized bags for such an occasion.
Do you care about the environment? Then use a Hessian sack to kill a mouse.
All right, folks. On this episode, we have some fabulous stories centered around rivers. As we all know, there are often stories of the paranormal around such things. But before we get there, we'd like to thank our patrons.
This one's for the patrons.
That's right, patrons. You are the Kanga to our Rue. And that will only make sense if I leave a particular part of the show in, but fuck it, it stays. It stays, because I love it. You are the Kanga to our Rue, and we could not do this without you. And of course, we'd like to thank all our patrons, but we'd especially like to thank our latest patrons. They are Hilary de Saussure,
Theodore Bell,
Joshua Gonzalez,
Christina Carboni,
Adrian Eibergen,
and Jessica Schultz.
Thank you so, so much, guys. And if I mangled any of your names, please do let me know. Paul and I were arm wrestling over who was going to try and figure out how to pronounce Hillary's name. So undoubtedly I got it wrong, but please know that he would have gotten it wrong too. I think it's important.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah, that makes up for Ghost Force the other one.
Yeah, fair. Really, though, guys, we couldn't do the show without you. You guys allow us to make the magic, and without you, there is no show. And certainly, we appreciate everyone who listens, but our patrons are the ones who allow this strange and wonderful beast to keep living. So if you want to join the team, head on over to patreon.com/ghoststoryguys, and you'll hear about all the extra stuff at the end of the show. But I will say, if you don't like ads, and who does, because ads suck, for $1 a month at patreon.com/ghoststoryguys, you get an ad-free feed. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, stories from the River's Dark.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Welcome back. As we said before the break, on this episode, we're going to be telling stories that center around rivers. And, you know, I think it's because I grew up next to basically two rivers where kind of two rivers combine. I've always had a very, very, very high awareness of the danger of rivers. Not necessarily the paranormal side of it, but just the, you know, holy shit, stay away from the river side of it. Because the Columbia River, near where I live, has very powerful undertow. And so you are schooled from a very young age to not play in the river. And I think, I mean, the stories that we have in this episode, I think they kind of bear that out.
Yeah. As someone that nearly drowned in the Mediterranean, I fully appreciate that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I got caught in a riptide.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. I was clinging onto a really sharp rock. You know, I was quite lucky that someone spotted me and got me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. That was not fun.
No kidding. Stay out of the water, folks. I'm just telling you.
Mm, yeah. If the lake monsters don't get you, then the waves will.
When I learned that lakes can have undertows, I was furious. I should be safe here. This is tame water. No, it is not tame water.
Yeah, yeah.
So you said that you know some particularly spooky stories to kind of get us going.
Yeah, yeah. One of my favorites is from Australia, and it's called, rather unusually, and we'll kind of give you a feel for it, The Devil's Pool.
Well, that sounds encouraging.
And it's one of those, I think often when we find bodies of water, there's always a tradition that some poor heartbroken woman has drowned herself due to losing the love of their lives for a variety of reasons.
Of course.
However, the thing that makes this one a little bit different is that since 1959, 17 people have drowned in it.
Jesus.
One of the strangest reports was there was an incident where some friends, you're not supposed to go swimming in it because it's powerful currents and they can basically keep you under. You can't get out.
Woof.
And there was some friends went there in 2010, I think. And one of the guys, I mean, one of them drowned, and they were interviewing his friends at the inquest about it. And he said, yeah, we were just stood there. And then all of a sudden, it was like he was grabbed and dragged backwards away from us. Oh. And they just couldn't reach him. And they kept trying to grab his hand, and his hand kept slipping. And he grabbed a branch, and the branch snapped. And he said, we could see him, but we just couldn't get to him.
Jesus Christ.
So, yeah, it's notorious. Like I say, 17 people in just over 50 years. So, 60 years. So it is notorious in that particular area of Australia.
And that sounds like it's trying. You know, that's not just, oh, you wandered into the water. That's the water wandered into you.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Because they would just say they were just having a paddle, and he went, gone.
Oh, man. Absolutely terrifying.
Yeah. Another one of my favorites is from the States. And I'd always heard about this. This one's quite odd because it's got some urban myths, a bit of history, and a terrifyingly high death count.
Oh.
So Lake Lanier in Georgia was created in the 1950s. The US government came in, bought all the land, undersold everything, screwed all the farmers over, left them with pittance. So they flooded this whole basin where all these farms and villages and little towns were. And of course, one of the aspects of all this was that they were going to move the graveyards that were there.
Oh, no.
So they told everybody that they'd move them. And then stories started coming that people kept hearing things and seeing things. And eventually, it became ingrained that ghosts were still there because their bodies were still trapped under the lake. And so a lot of officials dismissed it and said, oh, no, it's all nonsense. No, none of it's true. It's not true. However, on a recent episode of Expedition X, Josh Gates, Phil Torres, who's his biologist and sort of the skeptical one of the pair, they thought, oh, well, we'll disprove this. So they sent Phil into the lake and he found the graveyard. The gravestones are still there.
Oh, man.
They just left him.
I mean, I shouldn't be surprised. I feel like that's one of those things where if you don't have someone making sure the developer, whoever it is actually going by what they said they're going to do,
mm-hmm.
you just should expect that the bodies are going to be there.
Yeah. Yeah. But the other weird thing about this place is, guess how many people have died on it since 1994?
10.
Nope.
20?
Nope.
30?
Keep going.
You're 40.
Nowhere close.
60?
No. Shall I tell you?
I give up. Tell me.
Over 200 people since 1994.
What?
Yeah. Over 200 people have died there since 1994, either through boating or swimming accidents.
That is a mind-boggling number.
It is for a landlocked lake. They don't like to talk about it because they say, oh, well, it's very popular because it gets millions of visitors because it's a massive, it's a stunning area. It's beautiful. And it's obviously very popular in the summer months,
right,
as you would expect in Georgia, because obviously it gets a little hot and humid down there. But right. When I saw that amount of people that have passed, I just thought that doesn't seem right at all.
No, that's madness.
And of course, there's also a ghostly lady that wanders around trying to encourage men to follow her back into the lake as well.
At that point, it feels like she's almost out of work. What's the point? You're just gilding the lily now, lady.
Yeah, just hang about. But that's crazy. You know what I mean? 10 a year?
Yeah, that's staggering. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess, again, given the total number of people going there, it's a small statistic, but that's still a lot of dead folks.
Yeah.
Now, with the murderous credentials of water firmly established, it's time for some stories. Alone. My hometown in Latvia is bisected by a river, and along that river there is a trail which runs from our district to the more central parts of the city. It's not often used, so it's overgrown and frequently overflows with water, which means it's also usually muddy. It is also covered in litter, as some of the locals tend to party and leave behind empty bottles. This happened about 2 years ago, when I first ventured there. Before this, I had not even known there was a path. At a certain spot, not far from where people get water from a nearby underground spring, I began to feel as if I was being followed. It was a very specific sensation, like someone was walking too closely behind me. Even if I felt no breath or touch, the presence was pushing into my back, It was truly like one would feel if someone was, for example, standing too close to you in the bus or supermarket line. It followed me for maybe 30 or 40 feet, and then I didn't feel it anymore. It's possible I was just being jumpy. It is a wildly overgrown spot, and I'd never walked there before, so I was on higher alert than I ordinarily would be. Also, the river is quite wide there, and the bank is level with the shoreline and path, creating the dizzying sensation that the stream is carrying you along or beating the ground from underneath your feet. So some of what I experienced may have been environmental, but not this next part. As I kept walking, I began to feel like whoever was following me was someone who had wasted away, drinking themselves into slow death. It was, possibly, one of those riverside party people, although for some reason, I never believed the individual died there. It was as if he had died elsewhere and come back to hang out. The other perception that I got, and I'm not really a medium, I rarely get these kind of impressions, was that nobody noticed. That person had gotten lost, and nobody paid attention. You know how certain groups of society become invisible despite them still being alive? Drunks and poor people, you know what I mean? They sort of become ghosts before dying. That was the impression I got, that this person was one of those poor people. I was sad and wanted to help, but at the same time I was overwhelmed with that sense of intrusion, of having them disturb my privacy. I walked there many more times and got the same feelings around the same spot and the same sensation of somebody treading behind me. I did not feel threatened or in any danger. I simply felt that we were incompatible.
It'd be interesting to see if other people have walked in the same area and have had a similar situation, because I'm a big believer in it only affects certain people for certain reasons. So it would be very interesting if other people have that feeling of dread or a perception of being followed or watched.
Yeah, especially such a... I'd be curious to know if they had the very specific sensation or thought about someone being marginalized or left alone. You know, because I sometimes wonder if we maybe interpret these things through our own bias. And obviously we don't know anything about the storyteller, so it's possible that this is just something that is on their mind anyways. You know, it's always hard to know.
Mm. Breath. Me, my brother, and two friends were camping in the forest, some 2 miles from our house in central Scotland, not far from Loch Lomond. We had a fire and spent the night sitting around it, having a drink, and occasionally going down to the river to check the fishing rods. It was about early to mid-October, and there was a really bright full moon high in the sky, with no clouds to be seen. Later on in the night, we decided to go for a walk up to a hill we had passed earlier in the day. Atop it was a bench overlooking an open meadow and the meandering river we were fishing in. We sat there for a while, smoking, talking and laughing, then decided to head back. We stood to collect our beers and trash when I heard heavy breathing, like somebody had just been for a run. Before I could even say anything, my brother asked us all to be quiet. The breathing was so heavy and direct that I started to wonder if somebody was watching us. I told everybody to hold their breath in case it was one of us, but the breathing continued. By this point, everybody could hear it, but we were still half drunk and laughed it off, thinking that maybe people were out for a romantic midnight stroll, and the four of us had just interrupted their perfect evening. One of our friends even tried to get a response by calling out a joke about dogging, but there was no response whatsoever, just the heavy breathing, which we could all pinpoint to an area of waist-high grass about 10 foot in front of us. We started to wonder if it could be an animal, but no animal I know could breathe that heavily without us seeing it or disturbing the grass around it. I got goosebumps then and said so. The others laughed, but without any real humour, and agreed they had it as well. At that, the breathing got louder. It felt like we were looking directly at it, and it was looking straight back at us. My brother and I broke 2 branches off a nearby tree and decided to move towards the sound to see if we could make whatever it was reveal itself. As we approached the breathing, it stopped. We stood at the edge of the waist-high grass and looked down the hill onto the moonlit-filled meadow. It was really bright for about 1 in the morning, and we could see all the way down to the river. More importantly, there wasn't anybody or anything about. Then the breathing started up again, maybe 15 feet down the hill, at the start of the meadow. Me and my brother looked at each other, and we could see that both of us wanted to find out what was causing this breathing. So we marched down the grassy hill, clubs in hand, to try and at least catch a glimpse of whatever was causing the noise. As we approached the bottom of the hill, the breathing stopped again. Moments later, it started again, but further off into the meadow. Thanks to the full moon, we could see across the whole meadow of grass and into the woods on the other side of the river, yet we never saw anything move, not even the thick, waist-high grass. We continued on, and when we came to a small clearing with clumps of knee-high grass and an old barbed wire fence, the breathing stopped again. Our friends who were still standing at the top of the hill must have been scared out of their minds, and they were calling down to us to come back. As my brother told them to be quiet, the breathing started up again, loud and deep, like it was touching shoulders with us. We were startled and began to swing the branches around like a couple of frightened cavemen. This must have had some effect as the breathing stopped, then started again further away from us seconds later. It sounded like it was moving towards the river. By the time we got to the riverbank, it had stopped again, and when it started back up, it was on the other side. Whatever it was had managed not only to cross the meadow without being seen, but the river as well. Something was not right, and we decided it was time to go. My brother and I ran along the path as fast as we could, completely terrified. I still, to this day, get goosebumps when I think about that night. It has forever changed my outlook on the way we look at this amazing world we live in.
Well, as someone who has, shall we say, been surprised in a section of woods that turned out to not be as remote as you thought it was, I was expecting a very different end to that story.
Yeah, well, Loch Lomond is a spooky place with a long history of haunting, so anything's possible around there.
Yeah, there's a, what is it? There's an inn there that's apparently famously haunted. That's it, yes.
Yeah, some creepy stories there. There's a ghost of a little boy. There's another ghost that likes nipping women's bottoms.
Okay.
Described as a sex-crazed ghost by a British tabloid.
I mean, it sounds like British tabloid reporting, all right.
Yeah, oh, definitely. Keeping that reputation held high. one of my favorite stories from there is from a couple of, I think it was a boyfriend and girlfriend who stayed there. And they'd stayed there several times before, never had anything, and they stayed in room 115.
Right.
And when they got up in the morning, they noticed their digital camera was slightly off where they thought they'd left it. And when they got up in the morning, when they went to check the camera, they noticed that there was loads of pictures taken, and it was of them while they were asleep.
Oh, Jesus.
So they went and said to their friends, you know, have you been pulling his leg? And they were adamant, you know, no, we've not been doing it. We've not been trying to wind you up. They spoke to the staff. The staff said they'd never done it. So that's one of the, because there's two other, I think room 2 and room 6 at the Drovers are supposed to be the ones where if you want to get awakened in the middle of the night by a ghost, they're the two stopping. But this one, that one was particularly creepy. And it is actually still on, I think it is on the Drovers website, actually has some witness accounts that people have emailed them back saying this happened to me when I stayed at your haunted inn.
Dear, you bastards.
Yeah. But it's a long history. Like Viking, there's stories of people seeing Vikings and obviously drovers and soldiers and things. So it's got a long history, that area. I mean, it is a stunningly beautiful place, Loch Lomond. I've driven past the Drovers.
Oh, really? But never, not been in?
No, we couldn't get in. It was fully booked, sadly. We had to stop up the road. But
of course.
There was where we stayed, it was far more fun because there was an aggressive peacock that stared at you while you had your breakfast.
As someone who's had aggressive peacocks in his front lawn, I also identify with this.
Yeah. He clearly took a shine to my bacon, I think, and he kept headbutting the window.
Jesus, that's terrifying.
Luckily, growing up where I lived, we were quite used to peacocks, strangely. There was quite a few where I grew up.
I just have this image of you in a street gang like West Side Story, dancing and fighting against an opposing gang of peacocks.
Yeah. Yeah, happened all the time in Bluebell Meadow.
You heard it here, folks.
Peacock dance-off.
It was a different time.
Innocent times. The best of times.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
But really, what the hell was breathing in that meadow? That bothered me.
And it's the fact it keeps moving. I think that's fantastic.
And the fact that, like, it crossed the river with no apparent effort. It kind of reminds me, we talk about this all the time because it's one of the few things I know about Bigfoot, but the Ron Moorhead stories.
Yes.
How, you know, they would hear clicking up in the high Sierras, but then the clicking followed them separately when they went home, which is kind of bizarre.
Yeah, very true. And I also know you can clearly tell that those people were British because obviously they mentioned dogging.
So, you know, I forgot to mention that.
I'm surprised.
Yeah. I was wondering, is anyone not from there going to understand what dogging is? And can you explain it to them, Paul? This is on you.
Okay.
Make me read the patron names first, will you?
So, dogging is a term used to describe people who arrange sexual rendezvous in public car parks where two people will be in a locked car having sex whilst other people stand around and watch them.
There you have it.
And this is... there are certain websites where you can find the best places to go dogging in your local areas.
Have you ever gone and observed this mystical team sport?
Incredibly, in the rich and fantastic tapestry that my life is, it is something I have never done, and it is also something I have no intention of doing.
Because I got to tell you, right now, sitting here, I'm thinking, I'm bored. Let's go see who's fucking and where.
Yeah. There are, near where I grew up, strangely enough, the other side of the village from Bluebell Meadow, Peacock Dance-Off area, is a sculpture park, which is incredible. It's full of fabulous sculptures by some of the greatest sculptors in the world. And their car park is a dogging hotspot, shall we say. But it is next to the major motorway of the UK, the M1. So it's easy for people from Huddersfield, Leeds, Wakefield and Barnsley to reach in less than 20 minutes.
It's important for your kinks to be convenient.
Absolutely. Great road links are a necessity for the dogging fraternity.
Folks, don't say you never learn anything from this show. The boat. This story takes place more than 30 years ago, along the Vermilion River in Ohio. Back then, we camped in a different location than we do now. This one was about 2 miles upstream of Mill Hollow Park on the riverbank. There were four of us. Dave, Fernando, Frankie, and myself. We set up camp, building a lean-to and a fire, and made dinner. By the time we'd finished and cleaned up, it was getting on towards dusk. We four sat there on stumps, smoking cigarettes, enjoying the peace and quiet. Although there was a road fairly close to where we were, it was a faint murmur in the distance, outdone by the sound of the Vermilion River flowing past on its way to Lake Erie. The birds and insects provided a natural soundtrack to our evening. There was a sandbar, about 20 yards from where we sat, stretching downstream for about 15 yards. Another 15 or so yards past that was a bend in the river. I was facing downstream, watching the shadows deepen on the moving water. Just as it reached full dark, I saw a group of lights round the bend, heading toward the sandbar. It was a flatboat, being towed upstream, looking much as they did in the Ohio history books we'd all studied in junior high. Four men, each carrying a lantern, each grasping a rope with the other hand, the ropes trailing over their shoulder to the boat, pressing forward in the knee-deep water. There was a light on a pole on the boat itself. The men were clearly visible in the lantern's light, and I could hear their voices, although I couldn't make out what they were saying. As they approached the sandbar, I noticed something odd. The lanterns cast no reflection on the water. Just as I turned to Dave to ask him if he'd noticed this, the boat and its crew vanished, the lights extinguishing simultaneously, as if by a switch. We broke out our flashlights, walked down to the bank, and shone them on the water and the sandbar. There was nothing in sight. The four of us sat around the fire, in agreement about what we'd seen, except for one of us, Fernando. He swore, and did for years after, that he saw and heard nothing, to the point of belligerence. However, from where I sat, I could see him, staring in the same place we all were, and I still remember the look of shock on his face when the boat disappeared. That is like a classic ghost story right there.
Oh, yeah. I love a ghost boat. I adore stories of the Flying Dutchman, even though it's probably all nonsense. I love those stories about people coming across this damned vessel at sea. And the Mary Celeste, of course, one of the most perplexing mysteries of all time.
Oh, of course, yeah. For folks who don't know, can you give them sort of the Coles notes of the Mary Celeste?
Yeah, so the Mary Celeste was a, I think it was a schooner that was traveling from New York to Europe to deliver some alcohol. And it had a experienced captain and his wife and baby daughter alongside a crew. And they were expected to make a journey across a certain period of time. And then a boat that had been next to them in the harbour spotted them drifting wildly off course near the Azores, went to them and discovered that every single person on the boat had vanished.
This is one of those stories where sometimes it gets embellished a little bit, am I right? Where there people will say, you know, the pipe was still smoldering on the table, or, you know, dinner was still like cooking on the top or something. Does any of that have a basis in fact?
It did look like things had been happening, but there wasn't anything like, you know, the stove wasn't still warm and things like that. People had, you know, places were still set for dinner and the bed hadn't been made and things like that. So it looked like people had very quickly just decided to do something. I suppose the biggest clue is obviously that their lifeboat wasn't there anymore.
Oh, interesting.
But a lot of people suspect that fumes from the alcohol had caused them to think that, I mean, this is one of the potential solutions to it. There's not much evidence of it, but that's what they like to put forward. Because all the doors were open for the hatches, so it looked like they'd been letting something out. And so they were obviously concerned that it may blow. They proposed that they all got onto the lifeboat, and unfortunately the connecting tether snapped and they drifted off, never to be seen again. I mean, it was quite scandalous because the people that found the boat were accused of murdering them all.
Sure.
And they had a court in Gibraltar, and they claimed that a sword that had been found on the ship showed evidence of blood, which later turned out to be rust. And the people who found the boat, rescued it and towed it into Gibraltar, were only awarded 1/5 of the compensation they should have been awarded because the government officials believed that they'd hijacked them. Even though there was no evidence of that, they just decided.
Well, when you make all the rules, you get to choose how they're applied, I guess.
Yeah. But it's also, when you dive into it, the Mary Celeste did have a history of seemingly bringing bad luck to whoever owned it.
Really?
Yeah.
So after it was found, it was put back into service?
Yeah, and then it ran aground somewhere and sank. But it was renamed because it was called something else before the Mary Celeste, and I think it had been scuppered prior to that as well, and it had only just been repaired and renamed, and so it had a history of being a problematic vessel.
Interesting.
We've also got Arthur Conan Doyle to blame for the legend of the Mary Celeste, because it was his report that created the legend version of the story.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he also changed the name to the Mary Celeste.
Oh, from Marie Celeste.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, interesting. And wasn't his whole thing debunking stuff like that? Like, wasn't that a big part of his, like, bit of a debunker?
He started out as it and then obviously went completely the other way. That's why him and Houdini fell out.
I had no idea.
Yeah, because Conan Doyle believed that spiritualism was real and all psychics were real and ectoplasm was real. And Houdini said, they're all con artists, they're all frauds, they're all fakes. So they fell out.
Fascinating. I had no idea. Perhaps we are their reincarnations. What will our fallout be? Will it be Bigfoot?
I was going to say, I'm not, you're not tying me up in chains and chucking me in a river for anybody's money. I can tell you that right now.
Well, you've ruined my plans for the Ghostery Guys live show, so.
The San Pancho Bridge. This experience was told to my grandmother by my oldest uncle, Theodoro. This story takes place in San Francisco del Rincon. This place, called San Pancho by its residents, has many myths surrounding parts of the town, specifically the oldest parts. One night, my Uncle Lolo, as we call him, was returning home after a late night gig. He was a mariachi in his younger days. To get to my grandma's house back then, he had to cross a bridge under which ran a river that has since dried up. People used to throw their garbage down there. There were also rumours going around town that the poorest women of San Pancho disposed of their unwanted babies down there, but who knows if that was true. In short, people tried to avoid this bridge after dark, because according to them, strange things would happen there. So my uncle, being a super macho guy, decided that he was not going to take the long way back to the house, and would cross the bridge. As he did, he started to feel a cold breeze, which he thought was weird, since it was the middle of summer, and it's usually very hot at night. He continued walking, starting to hear the sound of chains being dragged on the bridge behind him. At this point, he started to walk a little faster, his heart pounding in his chest. All of a sudden, he heard a blood-curdling scream from behind him, and he froze. Very slowly, he turned around to see who or what screamed, and standing there, a couple of feet in front of him, was a woman with long dark hair and an old-style dress. He described her as ugly, with bloodshot eyes, a ghastly mouth, and pale skin. As he stood there staring at her, the woman started screaming again and began to move towards him, floating. Well, my uncle dropped his trumpet and ran to my grandmother's house as fast as he could. When he finally got there, he started banging on the windows and door, shouting for someone to open up. My grandparents got up, hearing all the banging, and opened the door for him. He was pale and barely able to talk as he was crying so hard. It took him a while to tell my grandmother what had happened. After that encounter, he never again crossed the bridge at night by himself, and to this day he still gets chills when he talks about that night. The bridge no longer stands. It's now a road, but people still say late at night they hear babies crying and the sounds of chains being dragged upon the road.
And that's how toxic masculinity fucks you up.
Well, we've all been there, haven't we? Don't go to the spooky place. I'll show you.
Right. Don't go to that Denny's. Go to the good Denny's. No, by God, I'm going to this Denny's.
What is it about bridges? I think wherever you are in the world, there is a real cultural fear that seems ingrained from centuries ago about fear being associated with bridges.
You know, I had a message from Bob Vasquez a couple days ago. And Bob, I didn't reply to you. It's because I got thinking about it and then I forgot. This happens. But, you know, he was asking me a sort of similar question about doorways. You know, why do we have this lore around things have to be invited in to doorways or windows? Because if they're incorporeal, why does it matter? Why bother going through a door or window when you can just drift through a wall? And I think maybe there is some kind of, I can't think of the word, but some sort of symbolic power to things that we don't understand. So the notion of a bridge, I mean, maybe it's because the bridge crosses water. And, you know, we talk so much about the power of water. I mean, this whole episode is about weird shit that happens around rivers.
Yeah.
So maybe there's some symbolic notion to crossing the river. Or maybe it's because it puts you in the middle of water and ordinarily you would not be able to cross that water. You know, like maybe when we cross water, whatever currents run through that, if we accept that there are some kind of extrasensory currents involved there, maybe they go up higher than just the water itself. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing as well about running water, because obviously you have things like, in certain cultures, vampires can't cross running water.
Yeah.
You have trolls that live under bridges. You have ghosts that are associated with bridges. You have bridges that get reputations of being spaces of negative energy and become sadly known for being prone for suicides and things like that, and tales, you know, as we mentioned in that one, where people would dispose of their children and the like. I mean, other things as well, like here in the UK with the bar gas, the black dogs. You know, you were always safe if you got to a bridge because they couldn't pass over running water as well.
Right.
So, I don't know.
So, yeah, like I'm just thinking about it. I'm thinking about maybe there's a scientific reason. Maybe whatever creates, say, a bar gas or whatever it is, maybe it is incompatible with the larger currents of the running water.
Yeah, could be a frequency.
Maybe it's like a magnetic charge almost or something,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Could be a resonance thing, something like that.
Yeah, that resonance. Yeah, that's it. So I wonder, yeah, I wonder if there is, again, I tend to think that the things we sort of, I think there is a lot to the world we still don't understand. You know, you had a guest on the show, I think it was Larry Arnold actually, or maybe it was Doug Hychek, but he talked about he doesn't believe in quote unquote the paranormal, just things we don't yet understand.
Yeah, that was Doug.
That's Doug, yeah. And so I think that's very much the case here. I think we're just dealing with natural properties that we don't yet fathom because we tend to still think of things in a very reductionist way.
Yeah. And we're always limited by our own intelligence. I'm often frustrated when people say, oh, well, we know all that. We know everything now. No, we don't. We don't. We know next to nothing. We just believe so because we wrongly assume that our intelligence is the scale of all knowledge, and it's far from it.
Absolutely. Chained. This story happened to me maybe 20 or so years ago when I was growing up. Here in Sri Lanka, we have an exam you take as a teenager which determines whether or not you go on to further school. If you pass this, then you get to study further, and if not, then you must take private courses and things cost more money. The town where I lived was small, maybe 2,100 people, and my house was more or less in the middle of it. My friend Nirved lived in the same town, closer to the western border, and was the same age but attended a different school. Not far from Nirved's part of town, there is another village, and that's where this story takes place. In this village, there is a river, and I remember my father saying that during the war, particularly in the 80s, there were times when the water would be choked with bodies. Innocent people were picked up and killed without anyone knowing, at least until their bodies were found either burning or hanging off the bridge or on the banks of the river or much worse. This river belongs to that other village, but it's still near to Nirved's house. Many afternoons when I went over to his house, he would talk about hearing the sound of chains at night, but he never made a big fuss about it, and to be honest, I never believed him. One night we had a lot of studying to do, and so we had a sleepover at his house. His mother very kindly kept us in food and coffee, and we spent hours working away in his room upstairs. I remember we were studying math when I heard it, what sounded like a heavy chain being dragged along a tar road. Faint, but definitely there. He smiled and said, "See? I told you." Even having heard the noises, I couldn't help but think of rational reasons for them, suggesting it could be tree poachers or something like that. We both wanted to go investigate, but the exams were looming and there was only so much time to study, so we stayed inside. That Friday, Nirved and I decided to explore my tree cutting theory, and so we both lied to our parents, saying we were at the other's house, and then headed toward the river as the sun was setting. Near the riverbank, there were some large wild mango trees, which were easy for us to climb and comfortably watch the world go by. To pass the time, we ate sweets and fish buns and talked about what the poachers would look like. The night was pitch black, with no sound and nobody around. We were both annoyed that the tree cutters hadn't turned up, and we couldn't go home because we lied to our parents, so we had to spend the night. We didn't have cell phones back then and no watches to tell the time, so I'm not sure when I fell asleep. I woke up to Nirved covering my mouth. It was cold out. I remember he looked terrified. Of course, I was furious he was touching me, but he kept making calm down movements with his hands, so I relaxed. Then he pointed to the road. A woman in a bright white dress with long curly hair was passing by very slowly. Chains were bound to her hands, and you could hear them clanging slowly in time with her movements. I wasn't scared so much as I was puzzled. How the hell could this be happening? Nirved whispered to me, "Is that what I think it is?" I didn't know how to answer. All we could hear was the rush of the river and the sound of chains dragging, until all at once the white-dressed woman vanished into thin air, then reappeared at the water's edge and fell in. In a split second, we both got down and ran to the river, shouting. We thought it was somehow a real woman who was about to drown, but, of course, there was no one in the water. Our shouting drew people to the river, and we told them what we'd seen. They had no answers for us, but took us home, where we had some explaining to do. It's a bit strange and funny that I didn't get scared, and I wanted to see that woman again. But after our parents heard about our adventure, well, I was grounded for a month. Several years later, the water board came and built a filtration plant on the river. Ever since then, the chains can no longer be heard. If I'm not mistaken, that is the second story in a row. Yeah, the San Pancho and then this with that a chained woman on a bridge. It's got a very La Llorona kind of feel to it.
Yeah, well, it is. I was thinking that when I was reading through them. I find it very interesting because one of the, or maybe some people say, the oldest ghost story ever involves a ghost wearing chains.
Which would be?
Oh, right. So, Pliny the Younger, the famous Greek philosopher and writer, recounted a tale about a gentleman called Athenodorus, who found a house, beautiful villa, and it was available at a knockdown price. And he couldn't understand why it was so cheap. It was beautiful. Massive villa, beautiful garden, vineyards. It was wonderful. But nobody had lived there. So he went and bought it. Couldn't believe how cheap it was. He thought, oh, well, I'm having some of this. And after, at night, the first night he was there, all he could hear were the sounds of rattling chain. And this spirit appeared to him, rattling its chains. And then it drifted off back to the courtyard and disappeared under an olive tree. This carried on every night for like a week. So on the seventh night, he decided to follow it, courtyard, and saw it vanish next to this olive tree. So the day after, he goes out and he gets some workmen and they dig up the olive tree, and underneath the tree, they find the skeleton of a man chained and bound underneath it. They remove him, bury him properly, and the ghost was never seen again.
Fascinating. And did ye olde Ed and Lorraine Warren turn up to try and take credit for all this?
Edwardius and Lorrainius. No, I've not seen Pliny mention anybody, but yeah, and that's, you know, that is a archetypal ghost story that still resonates in the 21st century, which I find remarkable that still seems to have that kind of resonance for tales. Greeks were very much into ghosts. They have.
I did not know this.
Yeah, the Greeks had a rich history of ghosts and ghost stories, and usually it was people like that had been wronged or murdered and were seeking retribution. But they viewed ghosts as a positive thing. They didn't really have a negative connotation, though places were often thought to be haunted. They didn't see ghosts in the same way that later civilizations viewed them.
Well, I wonder if that's partially connected to the Christian notion that, you know, ghosts can't exist because you're either in heaven or you're in hell. And if you're in heaven, then you're not going to want to leave God. So if we see you, then you must be a ghost. You must be of the devil. Huh. And so I wonder if that's partially why these things came to have such a negative, feel, or were considered in such a negative way.
Yeah, it would be interesting. I'm sure there is a philosophical reason for it, but. Yeah, the Greeks viewed them rather positively, all in all.
Fascinating. This is a big brain episode of Ghost Story Guys, folks. Pliny the Younger, we've had what? The Marie Celeste, we've had Arthur Conan Doyle and...
Houdini.
Houdini. You are learning some shit. I'm learning some shit today.
Yeah, I've had my bran flakes today. A perfect orb. This is one of my first physical experiences with the paranormal that can't really be explained. When I was 15, my sister and I shared a room at one corner of the house. We decided to open our windows to enjoy the summer weather and listen to the frogs that were down by the river. Looking out of the window, we saw a blue light down by the gravel road. We simply thought that it was someone down there walking, because teens went to the river to drink all the time, so we thought nothing of it. We lay down to sleep, and Amanda dozed right off. I was laying there almost daydreaming, and I decided to get up and look out of the window again. I dearly love summer nights in the country. As I looked out, I saw the blue ball of light again. It started moving up the road, then crossed over the fence and moved through the trees. It was moving lazily, but not fast enough for someone that would be walking with a light. Then it dawned on me that it was moving over a tree, and it was a perfect orb. I had never seen anything like it before, but it was beautiful. It lazily kept drifting up through the field towards the house. By now, I could see it clearly, and at least 10 feet around it was quite clear, because it was so bright. It just kept coming closer to the house, and I could see that it was roughly the size of a grapefruit. It was then that it reached my window, just hovering there. I didn't freak out or feel scared at all. I cannot express how beautiful it looked. The light was so bright, yet you could look right into it without squinting. I was so caught up with it and curious that I didn't even think to wake Amanda up. At this point, it started coming through the screen. Admittedly, I didn't exactly know what was going to happen, and at that point wanted a comfort anchor. So I jumped into the bed and pulled the covers up, but the orb was still there. It came fully into the room and floated over my bed, just hanging there. I had a staring contest with it almost. There was a bit of an anxious feeling, but nothing bad. More like when you meet a new person and hope they like you. I don't know how long this went on, but eventually I reached out to touch it, and then it backed away and zoomed off through the window. It was then I heard footsteps in the hall. Mom had gotten up to use the restroom and saw the light in my room and thought us girls were up gabbing and had come to turn it off. She just gave us a chiding without asking questions and left. So, has anyone else had anything like this happen? It was a really cool experience, honestly, and it didn't scare me at all. Also, I was glad that Mum had seen the light from the hallway, because then I knew I wasn't just dreaming.
And you've talked on your show about ball lightning and how it's often used to explain these kinds of things away.
It exists, but you're talking about, you know, minute balls of light.
Right.
It's one of those things that just gets trotted out as an excuse for anything. Oh, it's a UFO. Oh, people saw ball lightning. Yeah, Brown Mountain
right.
Lights, it's ball lightning. It's a ghost. Oh, it's ball lightning. Spontaneous human combustion, it's ball lightning. It's one of those one explanation fits all phenomenon things.
Yeah.
And yet there is hardly any evidence of them. They do exist. I mean, my granddad told me as a child that during a thunderstorm, they had a ball of lightning fall down the chimney and smash a window.
Interesting.
But this doesn't seem to act like that, because obviously ball lightning is very hot, very dangerous, can burn
right.
you, because obviously it's intense heat emanates from it. Whereas this seems a quite pleasant experience, almost spiritual, it would seem.
Yeah. It reminds me of a conversation I had with a guy, and again, I'm sure I've talked about this in the past, but there's a fellow from Calgary I once spoke to on the phone. And he was traveling on a highway in eastern BC when realized he was being paced by a light in the sky. It was as big as the moon, but it was below the tree line.
Mm.
Like it was as big as the moon was in the sky, but below the tree line. So he estimated it was about the size of a house. And he said it was shone with this beautiful bright light, but it cast no shadows.
Mm.
And he said this thing seemed to not necessarily be have any interest in him, but it seemed to be roughly going at about the speed he was. And he said he became he felt this like a overwhelming sense of calm.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually pulled over to watch it.
Mm.
He felt like he needed to, just something, there was something that told him you need to bear witness to this.
Yeah.
So he pulled over to the side of the road, got out, and he just watched this ball of reflectionless, shadowless light make its way down the valley until it disappeared from sight. But he said he was never threatened by it. And he said, I actually felt really good observing this thing. But he said, I've never seen anything like it and I can't possibly explain it.
Hmm. How interesting. I mean, there are areas all around the world where people have encounters with mysterious lights. So who knows? It's a strange one. I mean, one of my brother's neighbors is an Australian. And the first time I met her over the summer, She told me her experience of being chased by the Min Min lights in Australia.
Really?
Mm, chased which is amazing. Them. Yeah. Well, that's what they apparently do, the Min Min lights. They're cheeky.
Oh, okay.
They like to chase people and then just whoosh, disappear. So that was, you know, when somebody's telling you something like that, you know, why would you make a story up like that, you know?
Yeah, it's a very specific lie.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. And what goes on in Hessendalen in Norway? I mean, that's crazy, that.
Well, now you got to tell us about Hessendalen.
Oh, well, yeah, sorry, once again, my presumptions get the better of me.
you are far too kind to my knowledge base.
So Hessendalen is an area in Norway where strange lights have been seen and recorded for decades. And they are essentially balls and strings of light that seem to emanate from the valley floor and a variety of colours, and they have been witnessed by hundreds of people. And if you Google Hessendalen or go on YouTube, I'm sure you will find some footage and lots of people going, wow, woo, like that. Because that's the effect it has on people, because they are incredible. You know, it's like the Brown Mountain lights in North Carolina, which are dismissed as reflections of cars, which would be all right. But unfortunately, the story started before the invention of the motor car. So
I actually had that one someone either. Try and write that off to me as, well, those were horse-drawn carriages they were seeing. Like, those were, like, lit-up horse-drawn carriages they were seeing reflections of.
Driving that, Dracula.
I'm going to remember that for next time someone tells me.
Yeah, that old tradition of putting candles on a horse.
You put LEDs on the bottom of your car, you can put candles on a horse. It had to start somewhere, Paul.
Yeah. Do they not understand how motion affects a flame?
I'm going to go with no.
Oh, okay. Are we saying that this candle was vacuum sealed then?
That must be it. Must be it. Because yeah. I hear flame burns really well in a vacuum.
Well, I was about to say, so can you explain how that flame works in a vacuum for me, please?
I've blown up enough vacuum cleaners. I think I know a thing or two about this.
So, yeah, I like stories about mysterious lights. And obviously there's a lot to do with, you know, the fae. Lights in the forest leading people astray.
Yes. And the less said about that, the better.
Yeah. I'm going to be doing another episode on the fae.
I'll miss you.
They didn't get me last time.
But they got close. They got close.
Well, they came to see me in the hospital, didn't they?
That's true, right, yeah. Yeah, they probably don't mind you. It's me.
They know I'm on their side.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I found out that when I did my ancestry DNA test that I'm 21% Irish. So I don't know if that's like I'm not Irish enough, or maybe I'm just Irish enough that I should know better than to say some of the shit I said back when we started the show. I haven't figured that out yet. I'm also 44% Italian, so maybe they just really hate Italians.
Well, I've no Irish, Scots, or Welsh in my DNA. So
you're just cooler than I am, Paul.
Yeah, it's just mostly vampire.
That I believe. By the River Dark. In 2012, I visited one of my aunties, who lives at Saket Nagar Colony, about 4 kilometers from where I live. My cousin and I were of a similar age, and we talked about any and everything, including our strong belief in ghosts and supernatural entities. Whenever I visited my aunt's house, I would have to pass Baba Kinaram Ashram, which has 8 human skulls of varying sizes on its outside walls. The skulls are not real, but even so, whenever I passed, it would fill me with curiosity and give me goosebumps. Baba Kinaram was an Agori, some say the first, and if you do not know them, I suggest you look them up. They are an unusual order who many view with fear and suspicion because of their rituals surrounding the dead. They'll smear cremated remains on themselves or use the dead to make kapalas, which are cups made from skulls. On this particular visit to my aunt's house, my cousin suggested we explore the sandbank on the opposite side of the Ganges. Since I'd never been there, I agreed, and we set out, pointedly not asking for permission since neither of us could swim, and we assumed permission would not be forthcoming. So we did what kids do. We lied to our mothers, saying we were going to watch a movie and would be back late. Then we took our bikes and headed towards the river. We chose to stop at the Dashashwamedh Ghat, from where we could see the famous and spectacular Ganga Aarti. This is a group of priests who perform Agni Puja, worship to fire, wherein a dedication is made to Lord Shiva, River Ganga, Surya, the sun, Agni, fire, and the whole universe, sitting in the sandbanks of the river. We didn't know at the time that it was unwise to stay on the banks of the river after dark. The reason behind this is that this is where the Agori perform their rituals throughout the night. People had witnessed Agori sitting atop a human corpse which they pulled from the river, and then put ashes on their own body, as I've said. Due to their practices being contradictory to Orthodox Hinduism, the Agori are not well-liked. The dead bodies which they fetch from the river are usually those of people who died due to some accident, and whose body was not found by the police, or those unclaimed dead which are thrown in the river after autopsy. I've seen this. Bodies thrown in the river from the nearby bridge, and I must say that it is a bizarre and horrible visual experience. My cousin and I packed some snacks and water for the day, and hired a small boat to drop us on the other side of the river. Our boat reached the other side of the river about 5:30 p.m., so we could have almost an hour before the Ganga Aarti. We decided to explore the area as much as we could. You could see the tree line almost half a kilometer away across the sand, and my cousin said he wanted to go look. Just sitting there on the sand, he said, was a waste of time. The light was rapidly fading, and I wasn't terribly interested in going that far as we didn't know the area, but he was insistent, and so we went. When we finally reached the trees, it was quiet and empty. We seemed to be the only people around. My cousin had gone ahead of me, and I heard him call out. He had found a well which looked as though it had been used recently. There was water splashed everywhere. We also noticed some funeral clothes, a wide-mouthed goblet, and some human bones which had been scattered nearby. I guessed that this place might be used by the Agoris as a place to perform their rituals. Suddenly my cousin yelled and said he had seen a lady inside the well. I immediately responded and peeked inside, but saw nothing. I told him he might have seen his reflection on the water, but he wasn't buying it. We threw a stone inside, and when it made a mighty splash, he finally agreed there couldn't be a woman in there. That said, we decided we'd seen enough and should leave that place as soon as possible. While leaving, I felt that we were not alone, and something was keeping an eye on us. And then I saw a black figure in the trees. First, I thought it might be an Agori who was upset we had been hanging around their well, or maybe even my eyes were playing tricks on me in all the foliage. Whatever it was, I called the boatman and said, "We're ready to leave." But soon something happened that forced me to rethink my hallucination theory. When we came out of that jungle and started walking towards the edge of the river, the black figure came out as well. We could clearly see that it was tall and masculine, but transparent. Our hearts began to pound and we started to back away toward the water. Suddenly I felt a decline in my physical strength. It was hard for me to perform even normal physical movement. My cousin was the same. Slowly, that black entity started moving towards us, and just as he was getting close, he vanished. Suddenly, we could move again, but we had no energy to do it. We just collapsed there on the sand. By the time our boat arrived, our faces had turned a pale yellow. We could hear the sound of sholkas and mantras coming from far across the river. The boatman was surprised to see us lying on the ground and asked us what happened, but neither of us were interested in talking about what we'd just seen. Somehow, though, we made it home. But that night I slept terribly, as I had nightmares about walking in the charnel grounds as all around me pyres were burning. My nightmares continued for days, and finally I told my mother everything. She was terrified and told me that we may have encountered an entity called a Nishi, or a Nishidak. It is one of the cruelest spirits, attacking his victims in places like riverbanks and seashores, striking at the moment when day bleeds into night and draining the energy of his victims. Nishi are the most common entities called by the Agoris to guard their rituals. My nightmares continued for weeks, and it was only a blessing bestowed upon me at Kal Bhairav Temple which finally freed me from them. Now I know better than to play by rivers at dark.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hey there, listeners. Before you reach for that skip 15 seconds ahead button, I promise you this isn't an ad. We wanted to take a minute to talk to you about mental health. On this show, I've always tried to be as honest and open as possible about my struggles with depression and anxiety, because even though we've come a long way towards acknowledging the very real damage these things can do, there is still way too much lingering stigma about reaching out for help. And when you start to feel like there's no help, it's easy to start feeling like there's no hope. But Paul has joined me today to remind you there is always hope and there's always help.
We're not going to try and talk you out of self-harming right now, because we know that's not how it works. Instead, what we wanted to do was tell you something now and hope that should things get bad, you'll remember it and make a phone call or send a text message before you make any permanent decisions. As someone who knows all too well just how important mental health can be, it's never too late to reach out.
In Canada, the number to call is 133-456-4566. In the USA, the number to call is 1-800-273-8255.
In the UK, the number to call is 116-123 or text SHOUT, that's SHOUT, to 85258. In Australia, the number to call is 131114.
However bad shit seems, it will pass. And no matter what your brain might be telling you at any given moment, and believe me when I say I know this intimately, there are people who love you and people who care deeply about how you treat yourself. Should a time come when you find yourself despairing, please know that we've both been where you are, and there is a way back to the world. Take care.
Welcome back. Thanks, as always, to Luke, Anthony, and Sarah, and everyone else who's part of the Ghost Story Guys family. Luke's podcast, Luke Lore, is back full-time. You can find that at, well, pretty much everywhere fine podcasts live. Thanks also, of course, to my friend and co-host, Mr. Paul Bestel, the paranormal Johnny Carson, and host of the Mysteries and Monsters podcast. What's coming up on M&M, Paul?
Well, we're going back to a normal kind of schedule, seeing as I tried to fit as much as I possibly could into October.
You managed very well, I might add.
Thank you. So I've got some big hitters returning. I've got episodes with David Weatherly and Chad Lewis coming up in November. Paul Sinclair's returned to join me on the 150th episode.
Very cool.
We've got Katie Elizabeth coming back to update us on her work searching for Champ down on Lake Champlain.
Nice.
And we've got some other interesting things in the pipeline. So yeah, that's the next few weeks, really. So it should be good.
Excellent. Where can everyone find you online?
You can find us wherever you get your podcasts, looking for Mysteries and Monsters. And we're on all social media platforms under Mysteries and Monsters as well.
Perfect. As for me, you can find me at Larger the Truth on Twitter and Instagram. You can find my podcast, Larger the Truth with Brennan Storr, everywhere fine podcasts live. And I think last time we talked, I'd just about to put out the show with Mike Thorne. He's a Canadian horror author. So that's come out. And I've also just dropped the episode where I talked to the new UK band Damn Good Liars. They were actually musical guests of ours a little earlier in the year. We talk about their new EP, their debut EP, their new singles, and their first ever live date, which is coming up on November 19th, which is pretty cool. As I mentioned at the top of the show, if you want an ad-free feed or access to our massive archive of recorded material, including weekly episodes of Book of the Dead, Host Adventures, we just had an episode of Sunken Library drop this month, then you definitely want to head to patreon.com/ghoststoryguys. Speaking of, it's time to shout out Ghost Force! That's right. Patrons who support at the $20 level and above get a shout out every other episode. Here, in this segment, in these voices, because our vocal cords are tough and manly and they can handle it.
And I like to remember what I used to talk like when I was a smoker.
This time around, the members of Ghost Force are...
Ethan Saragon.
Amanda Jenks.
Amanda Strong.
Cheryl Baker.
Christopher Kuhns.
Danielle Harris.
Eric Abel.
Hannah Brown.
Hannah Siemens.
Ian Harrison.
Jackie McFarland.
Jade Moores.
Jeanette Patterson.
Jean Cupertino.
Joseph Como.
Julia Lugubrious.
Just Julie.
Jenna Black Welder.
Karen.
Kimberly Hansen.
Lumpy Rug.
Mara Noriega.
Mark Semler.
Mary Rose WW.
Peter Guns 08.5.
Rebecca Brink.
Rhonda Sheen.
And Richard Easby. You are the few. You are the spooky. You are Ghost Force.
Special people.
It's true. Thank you so much. You guys are crazy. We love the hell out of you. Thank you so much. And if you want to shout out every other episode in that segment, then by God, head on over to patreon.com/ghoststoryguys and, well, go from there. If you want to get in touch, send us an email at ghoststoryguys@gmail.com. We love hearing from you guys. If you got a story you want to share for a future show, that's also the place to send it. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/ghoststoryguys. We're on Twitter at twitter.com/ghoststoryguys. And we're on Instagram as the Ghost Story Guys. We also have a subreddit, and I always forget to plug the subreddit, but Sarah very gamely keeps maintaining it. It's reddit.com/r/ghoststoryguyspodcast. So if you want to follow us over there, you find the new episodes, you can chat about the shows, head on over there and say hi to Sarah. And if you don't want to type, you can always call the ghost line.
There's something strange. Call 1-888-588-6920.
Huge thanks to our listener, Amber Pease, for her Ghostline jingle. Again, that number is 1-888-588-6920. You can leave your story or comment as one or a series of voicemails. And if you don't want to talk, you can always text 925-553-4789. And I know last episode we talked about starting the Ghost Story Guys bingo card. You guys came through hardcore. So we're going to be at some point coming up with a list of actual what we want on the card. And then we'll be putting that out there. We had some really, really fantastic ideas. And we've had some wonderful messages, mostly texts to the Ghost Line. I know our patron April has texted us a story and some pictures. Someone texted us some great suggestions for the bingo card. We had someone say thank us for our weekly bit about mental health. And this person has said they've been going through some hard stuff. And I'm glad that we've made a difference for you. You know, that's why we put it there. And it's heartening to know that it's helping some folks.
Definitely.
And I think that's it for Ghostline. But yeah, 925-553-4789. If you want to text us stories or pictures, whatever you like, links, we will try and incorporate your message into the show. Thank you so much. So what's coming up for you, Paul? What's new? What's exciting?
Not a lot, really. It's a pretty laid-back month, thankfully. I mean, I've managed to get all the episodes are already recorded for November, so I'm just taking it nice and easy.
And you've got a guest spot coming up?
Yeah, so I've just appeared on an Irish show called Diamond's Dozen, which was good fun, and asked me a couple of challenging questions, shall we say, and I think I dealt with it very diplomatically. so, yeah. And I've had some interesting responses from my appearance on Over the Rainbow with Bob Brown. So, yeah, it's good. So next month should be, well, this month even, November, will be a pretty relaxed one.
Buy a spot on the Mission Spooky podcast. Should be out by the time this airs. I think Kiki was saying they're going to drop that on Halloween. So that'll be out. We're talking about mining ghosts and Tommyknockers and things like this. And I'm pretty sure I said enough stuff that wasn't legally actionable to make a full show, so make sure to check that out. If you could, rate and review the show, and make sure to tell your friends. I was recently reading that apparently rating and reviewing has absolutely zero effect on Apple charting or on how quickly a show appears. That's just a thing Apple has now come out and actually said. So tell your friends about the show. There's no better way to spread the word. Also, if you want to pick up some Ghost Story Guys merch, head on over to our website at ghoststoryguys.com. There you'll find links to all our merch stores. You can get signed copies of my book, A Strange Little Place, The Hauntings and Unexplained Events of One Small Town. At Big Cartel, you can get shirts, mugs, stickers, all kinds of cool stuff at our various links at ghoststoryguys.com. And if you do buy something, make sure to send us a picture of you wearing it and we'll post it up on our social media. We love seeing you guys on our stuff. It's always a thrill. And thank you to everyone who has been buying shirts. That's gone up quite a bit over the last couple months, and that's really nice to see. As always, big thanks to Peter of Pizzanto Music for our fabulous theme song. You can find him online at nightharvestrecordings.com or wherever you stream your tunes. Our story's theme is The Future Belongs to Them Now by Hexagram. You can find them by searching for Hexagram wherever you get your music. That's Hexagram with two X's, not three. And I guess that's going to do it.
Yeah. So we'll be back in a couple of weeks with some more creepy tales. But until then,
into the darkness we go. Imagine being a transformer that someone like Sam Witwicky decides to take you out dogging. How undignified.
Autobots, we must never tell anyone about this.
Yeah. Certainly makes you look at Bumblebee in a different way.
Yeah, that's why he doesn't talk. He's so traumatized. Do you know how many people have fucked in this car? I've seen things you people can't imagine. That's how Bren got knifed.
That's the dark web, isn't it?
Yeah, good point. We don't need that kind of trouble. Again. That's right. Another thing the judge told me I can't do.
Hang on, my system just froze. Ironically, my mouse was crippled. I'll let you go first.
You bastard. Fuck. I was trying. Someone's drilling outside my house, so this could be interesting, but continue.
Well, it is Halloween. I was just tidying up before I came to bed about 11:45, and someone went down the street on a pogo stick.
A pogo stick?
Yeah, because I could hear this. What the hell's going on there? And you know, when you just hear a weird noise, and you're like, what on earth could that be? Because it's 11:45 at night.
Yeah.
And then I was just looking out the room window, and I could see this shadow like going up in the air. And I thought, oh, my God, Spring Hill Jack's here. sadly, it wasn't. It was just some hipster on a pogo stick.
But I would love to have one of those giant skeletons, those like 12-foot tall ones. I always thought they were dumb until Nick and I were out for a drive, and there's a place downtown, or a place, sorry, over by the water. It's got two of them in a yard. And I just thought, okay, I get it now. I get it.
Like the people who've got giant inflatable Homer Simpsons dressed as Santa.
Okay, that's not quite the same. That's...
What do you mean? I was the same. Somebody nearly knocked me off the other day on a penny farthing when I was on my Dunlop perambulator. I mean, these hipsters, they just get everywhere, don't they? I came home and had a good trampoline to get over it.
All I ever hear are stories about people getting fucked up on trampolines. Nothing about it makes me think, oh, I should do this.
Yeah, I've always had a healthy respect for trampolining because in my younger life, I was a amateur gymnast.
Now, is that just, you know, you ran away from the police and you were quite acrobatic in doing it, or you were actually like a...
No, I got my Barga level 2 award. So I got a 4, a 3, and a 2. So it's stuff like jumping over pommel horses and cartwheels and forward rolls and backward rolls and tumbling and stuff.
That's pretty sweet. What prompted you to do that?
They just did it at school, so
that's cool.
And we did a bit of trampolining, so once you start jumping higher than your height, you realize that, I mean, plus I had a friend of mine who was an excellent gymnast at school, and he had a pretty bad fall doing gym, and then he'd come down later on to meet up with everybody, and as we were walking he just collapsed. And what had happened was he'd actually broken his leg, but it had just been in a certain way that it was just ready to go at any point.
Oh,
and as we were walking, his thigh bone snapped.
Oh, my God.
And we had to call an ambulance for it. It was quite exciting when you're 14. Yeah.
And hanging up.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.